Okay, as you said, I'm with the Federal Reserve Board, my topic is on, it's called FANCY, that's how you pronounce it. It was about a couple years ago, I swallowed the XML Kool-Aid and saw how I could use it in a lot of different ways, but I needed a way to edit the data, and I needed something that wasn't just going to be a generic sort of here's some tags and edit them. I needed something that I could put in front of users that could go in and they could fill in things and they wouldn't know that they were dealing with XML. So I'm going to talk about, I'm going to give an overview of what the GUI looks like. It also has a command line interface so that you can do stuff without the GUI. You can put it in CGI background. You can do just command line for transformations and stuff. I'm going to sort of skip over these because I don't have that much time, but I have a few application examples. I go into a lot more detail on the paper, but the ones I pick is this item set is sort of the driving factor was the first thing that set up how I was going to do a lot of the GUI. This BC Breaks was unique in that I started actually storing XML in Postgres so multiple people could access the same document, access and edit the same document at the same time. And SDMX is a new time series XML schema. And so this is something that we're actually putting in front of more users so that they can start building the SDMX data for publication without having to know all the gory details. And then the last part is how I chose various packages that I used in this, specifically why I chose TDOM versus TickleDOM, why TKHTML versus IHTML or other widgets, and some stuff about ticks and BLT. And I did this a few years ago when those were sort of my choices. They didn't have tree control back then. And a lot of this actually after Brian's thing yesterday, and when I get, I'm sort of backwards. I have Tickle 8.3 from Ajuba. I still have my Tickle Pro installation, but as things get out fleshed out, I'll probably move up to those. So this is what the GUI itself looks like. You'll notice I left my. It's got a. Well, you can't see that. It's got a tree area. It's got a sort of a view area, and then it's got a tab browser thing. It has, you can do regular expression searches or you can do XPath searches. Okay, great. So I'll break it down into pieces. First, you have the tree pane, and it has various XML documents that it's going to load into it. And it's all of this is configured within the GUI. So you tell it, for example, here's a little bit of a snippet of XML, and you tell it how to display this part over here on the tree and how that gets displayed and then how that component. And you also determine how deep everything goes. So it doesn't show the item element at all in the tree because you don't need to see that. The tree is supposed to be an overview of what you're going to be editing. And if you click on any particular node on the tree, it'll run it through a style sheet, and it'll display the results in the view pane. The view pane is just a TKHTML widget. So here's the XML that it's displaying. And it also has a special button over here that when you click the edit button, when you put this into the style sheet to use this edit button, and when you click that, it runs it through a different style sheet, and it opens up the result in a tab that you can then uses forms to let you edit the document. So this is the same XML document or XML snippet that is now brought up into the editor. So here's where you would enter this element and or this attribute and this attribute that. Text element, and then you're actually editing the children of here as well, so all these pieces are in here. You control what the user can input, so you're not just giving this can be plus or minus, and so this is a little radio button that's plus or minus. The formula here is actually not editable, and that's because what happens is when you click add a formula, it's going to add a new item with a type of formula. And if you clicked add input series, it would add an item with a type of input series. So like I said, I'm not talking too much about what the data is. I do talk a bit more in the paper about what behind this, but it isn't really important to this. The other thing is that all of the configuration for the GUI is done within the editor itself. So here you're looking at how you would actually describe what the tree looks like. So you have the name is going to be the name of the element that we're going to show in the tree. So you know, you'll notice this is indented. So we're going to show section, and then we're going to show series from the XML document. And so that's. And then this title is going to be this element is going to have some tickle code. You can't see it here. You can see it a little bit better in the paper, but I zoom in here. This right here is going to say set title is node at range colon node at title, and this gets when it's reading the document, it goes through each section in each series and it executes this in a safe interpreter, and whatever the final value of title is what's going to be displayed in the tree, and node is alias to the current node in the tree. So you can get anything from that node. You can access any of its attributes or stuff. So here is again is where they actually where the tree shows up. Then you actually can tell it which style sheets are gonna the name of the style sheets that you're going to be using. So a browse style sheet. When you click on the node, as you saw before, and then when you click on the edit button, when you click on the edit button, it's going to use this style sheet, and all the style sheets get loaded as soon as you boot everything up. As soon as you start the GUI, it loads all the style sheets, so they're just stored in memory. And display style is the name of a text display style that's driving controlling all the fonts. So the top level, the elements are all going to be, you know, bold, black, a little bit larger font. Some of them are going to be fixed fonts, and you control all of that with the display styles. You can also control how the panes are laid out. So, for example, I chose this layout for this application, and here I'm telling it that the tree is going to be over here, and that the view is going to be here, and that the tabs or the edit windows are going to be down here. This is all the user preference. You know, as a developer, you can set it up for how the default is, but then users can go in and change all that stuff. And it also fancy supports some very special links. One is this is what the HTML is for this edit button that you keep seeing. And the important thing is here, you can't really see that red doesn't show up so well, but the fancy in this URL is the host is as a host name links to an internal image. It also has a fancy URI scheme, which is going to link to an XPath expression. In this case, this is going to be the name of the XML document that we're going to look that we're going to search, and this is going to be the actual XPath expression. And an XPath can have multiple matches. So if I click on this URI, if there's multiple matches, actually as you mouse over it, it'll tell you how many nodes it's going to match. And if you click on it and there's more than one, the first one will open up in the view, and the rest will be highlighted in the tree. If you middle click, it'll open 10. That seemed like a reasonable number of things you would want to open up all at once. The other kind of special links are links like this one, which are going to be links to methods. So again, here I'm using href instead of an image source, and fancy is again my special host name. And build is going to be the method that we're going to call, and struct and h15 struct are the actual XML or the arguments to that method. So any public method that you have in the class or in any subclass are available this way. So the user can be presented with a nice front-end type thing, so they can go in, open a file, see the files. This page gets rebuilt every time you click on the help button there. The it also has a command line interface, so I have a shell script that you can go off and you can specify the class options and any particular method from it. It's all written in InkerTickle, so it's all object-oriented. So here's an example where I would tell it, and I want to start it off, and I don't want to tell it to read things from RCS, and that I'm going to use my transformation. Here's my document, my style sheet, and the parameters that I'm going to pass to it. If you don't give it any method, the default is to start the GUI if X is available. If not, it just gives you errors. So I'll talk a little bit. I talk a lot more about some of the methods in the paper. In fact, all of the source code is written with comments at the headers that describe what all the possible arguments are, as well as what it's going to return. And I have a script that goes through and turns that into the man page. So every public and protected method is in the man page. So I'll talk a little bit about this one. It's using TDOM. So you can use, if you just want a command line transformation thing, you can use Fancy for this. And I added some things that TDOM didn't do, XSL documents. So if you have a single transformation, you can put multiple output files. And I can also add my own XSLT functions. So for example, I added Fancy tickle. So within your style sheet, you can go off and run any tickle script in a safe interpreter. Without configuring the safe interpreter too much, I just added Fancy mTime so that I could give it basically file mTime, so I could give it just that one particular thing. And these are things that I needed, so that's why they're there. I didn't just put everything that I could think of, but as I needed them, I added them. EXSLT, which are is an XSLT extensions, they all work in TDOM. The elements all work. The functions don't. And I needed seconds and I needed date, so I wrote them as functions in tickle, but available through the style sheet. So, and if you have a subclass of Fancy, you can add any other methods that you want, or any other functions. So like I said, I'm going to sort of skip over this. The item set was, the big thing is that this was sort of how I decided how to do things, and that it was going to store everything in RCS. So Fancy just by default is just going to handle, if it sees that the file is in RCS, it'll check it out, and when you save it, it checks it back in. And that lets you do different reports and things like that. So BC breaks was different in that I needed to be able to have multiple users editing this same XML document in the end. So they're all going to be editing down to a particular element level. So what I did was I added a load DOM and a save DOM and a save node elements into the configuration file. And so I wanted to make this more generic so it wasn't just Postgres. So these elements are going to have tickle scripts that get executed when you load a DOM, save a DOM, or save or change really a node. So in this particular application, save node, the save DOM actually doesn't do anything. It actually throws an error because you can't resave the whole document because it's sort of a waste of time because you only ever ain't changing a particular node. But it has a save node that when you actually click the save button when you're editing a node, it writes the log to tell basically just the object ID that and what it changed, added or deleted or something. And then it sends to Postgres notify table updated. The GUI is sitting there listening for this table updated. And if anyone that's running a GUI sees table updated, knows to go off, read the log file, see what objects were changed. So if you're editing a document and someone else deletes a node, it'll immediately delete it off of your screen. If someone inserts a node, it'll immediately insert it into your screen. If you're editing the node that they just deleted, that tab disappears because you can't continue to edit it because it's gone. So the other application is this SDMX, and the unique thing about this is that all the other examples that I had so far, and I have a lot of other uses of this as well that I don't talk about even in the paper, but I was always editing a set of XML documents, and everyone that was going into it was looking at the same ones. In this case, end users need to build their own version of these XML documents, so I added these way to open different files, and what it does is it takes you have a sample file and it clones that structure. So it has all the load DOM, the save DOM, all those, how the tree looks, everything is derived. It just copies all that stuff but puts it into this particular document. And so now I'm going to talk about how I chose things. So TDOM versus TickleDOM. When I first started doing this, I didn't know which one was better. I didn't know which one I wanted to use. TickleDOM basically is really just tickle wrappers around live XSLT, XSLT2. And at first I supported them both, and particularly I like TDOM, but there was some XSLT bug when I was doing some sort of index searching, and I couldn't work around it. I needed to do that in the XSL. So I had a command line switch that tells it use this one or use that one. Rolf, I reported the error, he fixed it, and everything else that I found fairly quickly, and TDOM is just hands down faster than anything else out there. So, at least for the sort of things that I'm doing. Everything I've found, it's just so fast. So it doesn't support Tickle.dom anymore. Hasn't for a long time since, you know, it took.
Okay.
Is this, can he, people hear me better now? Okay. So Tix was a little bit faster, but not terribly so. That wasn't enough to choose it. But I've been working with Tix longer. I'm just more familiar with it. And the final thing was that the display styles, if you want to go off and change all the GUI configuration, it makes it really simple. It's sort of one place where you can go off and do that. I don't know if Tree Control has that, but even if it didn't, it looks like it'd be worthwhile. Obviously, the problem with Tix is it's virtually dead. The other one is BLT tab set versus Tix notebook, and there's a gazillion notebooks. Everyone has a notebook. And in this case, BLT had detachable tabs. You could take the tab and you could pop it off. I didn't really show it in the screenshots, but if you have two nodes that you're editing, you could pop one off and look at them side by side. And I guess with the there's a tip that you can now do that in Tickle directly and TK directly. So, and we saw with Brian's thing doing that. So, but really, detachable tabs was sort of the reason that I chose that. All the stuff is public domain. This is sort of legal mumbo jumbo, and you can really ignore it. But the bottom line is, I work for the federal government. This was for that, so it's all free. I keep it on my own personal website because that way it's not a job requirement to keep the website up to date. I keep it working for me. So if you use it, if you like it, ask me because I haven't updated the website in 2 years, but I updated it just now. I stood on the shoulders of many giants, and these are just a few, probably just about everyone out here. I use some of their stuff. Everything in here is Tickle TK and these extensions. I don't do any of my own C stuff or anything like that. So I guess that's all. Are there questions? Yes. Well, I use it, the paper talks some more, like I said, about some of the documents. I could, spend 20 minutes talking about just one of the applications. The main thing was the item set is it's metadata for report forms. So I have an index to what the banks fill out and when they filled it out, and then I need to adjust that data for mergers. So I need to be able to transform that into SAS programs to grab the data. We use it for SDMX. By the end of the year, we're going to have a website where we're going to be publishing all of our, a little bit at a time, but we're going to be putting out historical data. So we have tons of data, but we don't have a good, at least we don't have a consistent way to put stuff out. So I have zip files that people can download, and they never like them because they don't know how to get them into Excel, and I want them to be available to everyone, so I don't want to just put them in Excel. So we'll have a SDMX front end that if you want it in XML, you get it. If you want, you can get it in CSV, HTML, Excel, whatever you want. And it has query stuff like that. We use it for, a lot of other things. So, yeah. You say large, and then different people have different ideas of large. So megabytes, I'm okay with. The biggest performance driving is going to be how much of it you want to show in the tree. If you're okay with just showing a couple of levels, then you can do pretty good. If you want to show every single element, even on my documents, it ends up being, and it's really, it's the load time that's that. TDOM is as fast as you're going to get, regardless of the size. Obviously, because it's all DOM-oriented, it's got to be able to load it into memory. So, if you're doing stuff with it that is more suitable for a SACS processor, this isn't suitable for you at all. I haven't run into constraints. The data that we're putting out with SDMX is huge, but I'm never really actually loading that final data file into it. I'm really loading configuration files and structure files. So, yeah, it depends I can't really say this is big files work or don't. It depends on what you do with them. Yeah.
How much pressure is there to use browser-based interfaces for something like this? And do they change their mind when they see this?
For me, there's none. I have a very homogeneous environment. Everyone has PCs with Xseed and Linux on their desktop. There's really one source file where everything is, and I keep everything in RCS, and I make RPMs to distribute things, but that it's all on our own network. It's not really going outside of a pretty small group of people. Everyone's on the exact same Linux operate, Red Hat Enterprise 3. We used to be on Solaris, and we transferred to Linux, and it was a cake because I didn't have to change anything. So, in fact, I was always doing my development under Linux anyway. So, yes. It is a new industry standard, so it does have an ISO. The board is going to be the first agency that's actually putting out to the public SDMX time series data. It's sort of being driven by the BIS as an interagency data transfer, and they just published a version 2 of this standard. Well, a draft of version 2. We're using version 1, and like I said, we're planning to go out by the end of the year with it. So. Any more questions? Okay, thank you.